Okay, hey guys, this is going to be a bit of review for most of you guys. For some of you, this is going to be new. And the goal today is not for me to do a lecture or a big teaching. The goal is to get to some really fun interaction around what we do together on the Lord's Day. So that's where we're going to go, is we're actually going to have an evaluation of how integrated is the Sunday gathering in all of our congregations. So we're going to have a really fun time talking about that. We did this for our downtown team, and God really met us. And we've actually got some really cool things that are happening coming out of that. But to get to that place, I do have to do just a couple of minutes to review and set the table for us. One of the things that we love, in fact, I would say one of our core values as a church, is that we want to practice integrated theology. Integrated theology. We don't just want information. We want to actually have our hearts, our affections moved. We want to love God with the totality of our being. We want to actually metabolize truth, ingest truth. And we want to have multiple artifacts in our lives of what we believe is true and beautiful. And that leads us to this place where we get to talk about the great commandment. What's the great commandment? Yes, Jesus said, you're to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your mind, all of your soul, and all of your strength. Now, for most of my life, I just thought that Jesus was using a lot of words to make the point that we should love God a lot. And that what Jesus was doing was just sort of heaping up words to get to the point that this is really important, this really matters. But over the course of the last probably 15 years, I've come to believe that when Jesus uses those particular words, he's driving at components of reality. He's talking about different dynamics of being, and each one of those words that he uses, heart, mind, soul, and strength, get to a different facet of the holistic human being that we were created and redeemed to be. So let's put it on the board together and let's just talk about it. Jesus said that we're to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our soul, and all of our strength. Someday, when we arrive at true integration as a church, we'll have a whiteboard that functions. But until that day, we'll just be sanctified. Okay, so let's talk about each of these as components of reality. And as we talk about this, here's what I want you to be thinking about. I want you to be thinking about multiple levels of your existence. I want you to think about your life, the totality of who you are, and how God wants to actually invite you into a greater depth of being in your worship. I want you to think about the ministry that you lead or oversee. And I want you to think about our church together corporately. When he talks about the heart, this is the realm of relationship. And this quadrant of our being primarily deals with the question, who? Who? This is heart. This is relationship. This is who? When Jesus is talking about the mind, this is the realm of truth. And it deals with the question, what? What? When Jesus talks about strength, this is the realm of execution or action. What's the question that we could put on this quadrant? How? And when Jesus is talking about the soul, this is the realm of meaning. And this brings us to the question, why? Why? Now, I want you to pause here for just a second, and not to be critical, not to be jerks, I just want us to think about the broader landscape of churches in the U.S., right? It is typical for most Christians, for most leaders, to be disintegrated in the way that we respond to the grace of God. And what I mean by that is typically we have one quadrant, which is kind of how we see the world and where we live. And we might have one other quadrant where we have a little bit of energy. And that's also true of churches. So if you think of denominations and movements and churches, when it comes to their response to the grace of God in Jesus, most churches are not four-dimensional. Most churches and most denominations are at best two-dimensional in their response to God. So what kind of churches tend to love God with their minds to the neglect of soul, heart, and strength? Yeah. Okay. So you got Bible churches. I used to joke. This is one of the many jokes I used to make in the pulpit that as I got a little older, I tried to stop doing because it's just sarcastic and mean. But there's a lot of churches that could literally preach like a 14-week sermon series in James, and it never occurred to them that they should also like not just preach it, but maybe visit people in prison or actually think about what they're doing with orphans in the life of the church. So this is where churches tend to be. They tend to be Bible churches. They tend to think in terms of James K.A. Smith's framework for transformation, that human beings are just heads on sticks, right? And if we just teach enough, that'll result in transformation. And we could also probably include a lot of churches in the Reformed world. And in our tribe, this is to a large degree a lot of SBC churches. Okay, what churches tend to love the Lord with their strength, but perhaps they don't touch other three quadrants?
Liberal denominations.
How so?
Like they're all about feeding the homeless,
okay,
taking care of the marginalized, but they don't really have a theology that backs that up. It's more of a political thought
or okay,
something like that.
That's helpful. Hey, can we just call those churches like activist churches?
Yeah.
All right, so it's possible to be an activist church and to even sort of divorce our idea of justice and mercy from what the Bible actually says. So we can sort of have a pursuit of justice, but it could be cultural justice and not biblical justice. And to divorce justice from the concept of God's righteousness is a profoundly disintegrated thing to do, right? What other churches could tend to love the Lord with their strength, but not the other quadrants? Yeah, that's kind of where my mind goes first, is that this tends to be most of your mega churches where what can happen over time is excellence almost becomes an end to itself, right? It's like the point of excellence is more excellence, and we're just going to do a great job, and we're going to have amazing production value, and things are going to be immaculate, and we're going to make sure that the worship set is exactly 12 minutes and not 1 minute longer, and it's just a ton of excellence and a ton of execution, but not necessarily a lot of depth of soul or transformation. Okay, what churches could love the Lord their God with heart to the neglect of the other three?
Assembly of God.
Okay, how so?
Yeah, I just a lot of like feeling.
Yeah.
Feelings are motivating everything. If I feel this way, it must be true.
It's good. Okay, so emotive, passion-driven, emotive. We can kind of get into sort of a hype thing, like almost like we could start to, this is similar to the church that I was raised in. It's almost like we can start to think that we have to conjure God's presence and it's based on how we feel. So we start to act like the prophets of Baal dancing around and cutting ourselves with spears and swords to get God to show up. That can totally happen. It's just sort of passion. Emotions, like one of the things I want us to do is I want us to have a good theology of emotions, but even more importantly, I want us to have a good theology of the affections, which is deeper than the emotions. That's sort of like the core of your desires. What other churches could love the Lord with this quadrant to the neglect of the others?
I could see a
secret-friendly
church.
Okay, how so? Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it interesting how we could, in a really beautiful way, start with really desiring that people would feel loved and welcomed and accepted. But over time, if we become man-centered, we can be actually more hospitable to people than God. You know, we could care more about how people experience the service than how the living God experiences the service. Let me give you one other, because this is kind of where my mind goes first. This is a lot of your house church / community churches, where they do a really good job of knowing people and relationship, but it can sort of become us for no more. And often there's not a real depth of doctrine or of practice. It's just sort of, hey man, like we're just going to create a really stable, really safe relationship. This is a family and everybody's going to feel like they belong. And there's beauty in that, right? There's beauty in that, but it's missing some things. Hey, this is a little trickier. When we talk about churches that tend to do a good job of loving the Lord in the realm of soul or meaning, this is also, I'll just add a few more words to help flesh this out. This tends to be the place of mystery and of poetry and of metaphor, right? So to love the Lord with our soul, that's the place of like metaphor as poetry that sort of, it sort of hangs meat on things that are abstract. Okay, what kind of churches tend to love the Lord in this place of mystery and meaning and soul? Okay, yeah. I mean, that, yeah, a lot of the emergent church movement.
And the Episcopal Church, is that funny?
And what?
The Episcopal.
Yeah, that's like historically one of the biggest categories. This tends to be your more liturgical churches. Okay, so where you have like churches that really do a good job of the smells and bells. And here's something that's really interesting. Think of where the Roman Catholic Church got pre-Vatican II. It's really fascinating when you just think about so much transcendence and mystery, but literally like you had even some clergy that didn't understand what they were reciting in the Mass, let alone the people that didn't speak Latin. So there can be transcendence and mystery and awe and beauty, but people can literally not even know what the heck's going on or what it means or where to look in their Bible to even follow along with what's happening. Are you guys with me? So let's think about how do we engage these different quadrants? How do we engage these different quadrants? And when it comes to the mind, what's the way that we disciple the mind? How do we get to truth? How do we answer what questions? How do we invite people to encounter the presence of God in their minds? Yeah. So let's just say this is the place where we need teaching. We need open Bibles. We need truth proclaimed. This is also the place of being historic. And what I mean by that is we want to practice a healthy evangelical relationship with tradition. Tradition matters. We don't ever want tradition to trump scripture, but we want tradition under the authority of scripture to help inform what we believe. So this is the place of creeds. Creeds really matter. It's interesting that in the SBC world and in even some of the reform world, we can abandon the importance of historic creedal Christianity because we so want to practice the authority of scripture. But here's what's so beautiful about understanding church history and the creeds. If we're coming up with something that hasn't been taught in 2,000 years of church history, that should give us great pause. Like if Saint Augustine all the way through the reformers didn't think this way, like, well, that should at least make me go back and check my math, right? So this is where we teach. It's where we teach, and it's where we practice the creeds, and it's where we have a healthy relationship to the church's tradition. Okay, how do we engage the heart?
Living in community, life on the line.
Yeah.
A lot of things we practice here and just living in depth with each other.
Yeah, that's right. This is where we experience God and others. In relationship. Or another way to put it is experiences in relationships of trust. Right? So we want to have teaching, but we also want to teach into an encounter with God in safe relationships where people are able to actually experience the things of God in an enfleshed way. Isn't it amazing how many things in the Bible that we're called to do for one another that become means through which we encounter the grace and the help and the love and the presence of God? Okay, how do we engage the strength? This is just doing, right? This is the place of practice. The place of practice, building good habits. And this over here, I'm just going to put it up here, to engage the soul, this is the place where we need integration. And what I mean by that is, it's time to reflect and to be with God and to think and to meditate and to metabolize so that truth becomes ours. So let me give you an example of this before we move to participation and really digging into Sunday. Let's take doctrines of grace. Let's just think about doctrines of grace for a second. If we were to have an integrated approach to spiritual formation in the life of our church, and we wanted people to see the glory and the beauty of God saving sinners, that we didn't bring anything to the table, but it's all work of God. If we really wanted people to have a good, healthy, biblical / reform soteriology, we'd have to start by teaching them. We'd open up God's word. We'd take them through places like Romans chapter 8. But in the midst of teaching, we wouldn't just teach. We would want to start here. But then we would want to actually have people encounter the very presence of God in relationship where their hearts become tender. And they start to experience relationships where older believers share their testimony of how they didn't bring anything to the table, but it's all God. And how when they started to see the sovereignty of God in salvation, how that led to greater security and greater worship and more confidence in evangelism and praying differently. Those are all things that happen in relationship. That's an experience. It's an experience. And then, if you really want people to get it, there's got to be time to reflect and to be with God and to think and to metabolize that truth. This is how we avoid the caged Calvinist stage, right? Where it's like, hey, I just learned about the doctrines of grace and now I'm a jerk. There's nothing more antithetical to the doctrines of grace than being a prideful, bombastic jerk. Like, because if the doctrines of grace get into this part of your being, if they hit your soul, that's going to make you more tender. It's going to make you more humble. It's going to make you more prayerful. It's going to make you more worshipful. Like, the doctrines of grace is just, it's worship fuel. And then we would want people, in light of that, to change the practices of their life around how they trust God in all things, how they suffer, right? Believing that God's truly sovereign even over their suffering, how they know that God's presence is for them and nothing can separate them from the love of God, how they evangelize, how they pray for their kids that are far from God. Okay, this is an integrated approach to discipleship. Now, here's what I want us to do. I want us to, this is the general framework, this is overview, but now I just want you to think of your congregation on the Lord's Day. And we could do this for every ministry. We could talk about Wednesday night youth. We could talk about community group ministry. This is true of what's going to happen in our student camp. So this applies to everything. But just as a test case, thank you. So late night last night. Just as a test case to sort of get us to think about this, I want us to evaluate what happens on the Lord's Day. And you're not thinking about other congregations. You're thinking about your congregation. And I just want us to think about each of these quadrants, if we were really engaging that quadrant on the Lord's Day, if that was an integrated reality in the life of our church, what would the artifacts of that quadrant be as we gathered on the Lord's Day? What would people see? What would they hear? What would they experience? What would they be able to point towards? What would be the things that we would measure? How would we evaluate our church, Frontline Church, on a Sunday morning to know if we're really doing a good job of loving God with our minds? What would happen on the Lord's Day?
Regularly recite creeds.
There would be creeds and tradition. We would even maybe, like, we'd start to slowly and incrementally, and it wouldn't feel like a dry class, but we would start to give people church history.
Questions and conversations about theology, like people are responding with trying to understand, answer questions, ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be a culture where we're not afraid of hard questions and where people can ask questions, and when answers are given to questions, they're given not with hot takes but with open Bibles. What else would you think of as an artifact if we love God in, with our minds?
Preaching would be both accessible but also deep.
Yeah, preaching would have both depth and accessibility. And honestly, if we really were integrated here, how important would the pulpit be to what we do? It would be very central, right? It would be a central, not the only thing, but it would be a central dynamic of what we did. What other things would mark our preaching if we were integrated with our mind? This would be a place where we would do some good contextual work. What else? Not just preaching, but what other things would fill up this quadrant in our church?
The ways that we work through songs to teach theology through songs.
Yeah, talk more about music. What would music be like in a church that loves God with their mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's even goes into the conversation around healthy diet and types of songs we do.
Okay. Yeah, we'd be rehearsing again and again. Like in our music, you would have clearly experienced not just doctrinal singing, but like even before anybody got up to preach, just in what we sang, you would have the gospel explicit. You know what I mean? Like we would know that human beings are sinful. We would know that the cross and the resurrection are central. We would know that the result of the cross and the resurrection is forgiveness of sins, justification, adoption, sanctification. Here's something we don't sing about enough. We got to start to write songs in our church about future glorification. We got to start writing more songs about eschatology that help people to, in the midst of suffering and waiting, can have like their feet planted in hopefulness for the future. So we would sing and practice doctrine as we sing together, and it would be catechetical. Yeah. It would be formational over time.
I'm fascinated by this idea, just when I think about song and mind, like songs are so memorable, they're easy to memorize. Like I hear my kids like singing songs and I'm like, where did you learn that song?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's fascinating to me, and I think that this is someday how we're shaping and forming our people through song, because it just stays in our minds.
Yeah. That's right.
One of the things that Ben tells us all the time is that the sermon sings and the songs preach.
Yeah.
And just if we're not hitting that mark all the time.
That's good. That's good.
I stole that from Josh. Yeah.
Ben's a smart man.
Like, that's why he's smart.
Ben's a smart man.
He does listen.
What were you saying? Yeah, isn't it crazy? Like, there'll be songs that just get in my mind, and on dark days or bad days or struggle days, it's just powerful what singing does that engages the whole being. What else would people experience on a Sunday? What else do you guys want to flesh out here? Yeah. Yeah, isn't it interesting, like, there's ways in which, without saying, and now I'm going to teach you about ecclesiology. Like, if we're doing a good job of loving the Lord with our minds, even the way that we disciple volunteers and the way that we think about different ministries, we're going to be bringing that back to the doctrine of the church and how the doctrine of the church flows out of our Christology. And That would be a powerful thing. Hey, let's change gears for just a second. What would a kids ministry on a Sunday morning be like if we were integrated with our mind? Yeah. Yeah, there would be just like the word of God would just be woven into the entire fabric of what we did with kids ministry, right? What they're singing, how they're playing games. And that doesn't mean that it's not fun. Like we're thinking about it being full of life and fun and beauty, but the word of God is just woven into everything. Good. Okay, so let's pause here because we could go ahead. Last one.
Kids will ask really hard questions, not understanding what they're asking.
Yeah.
They will really challenge you to be on your toes if you're ever teaching.
Okay, now this is going to feel a little bit crass. It's going to feel a little bit crude and rude, but I want you guys to actually force yourself for just a minute. And this is not something I want to do every week because that's not how I want to live. But it's helpful to occasionally do an evaluation where we force ourselves to just get to the brass tacks. So if you were to evaluate your congregation and give your congregation a letter grade on how we're doing in loving the Lord on the Lord's Day with our minds as a church, what would the letter grade that you would give your congregation be? When you think of music and the entire liturgy and what happens with kids ministry and how we're forming volunteers, how are we doing in having artifacts of worshiping with our minds at Frontline South? Let's do South first.
B plus.
Why so?
I think it's really solid. I think the sharpening and the whole every minute should be sharpened. But I think preaching was really solid. The song shoes are really well. We could explain, like the slides do one part of explaining why we pray a certain way. Why we, you know. So I think there's some sharpening, but I think we do it pretty well overall.
Good. Man, that's encouraging. Is that kind of the consensus for you South folks? So like,
I was surprised on the optimistic one. Just fine. I'd say A minus.
Okay. That's good. I don't even know what the difference is between a B plus and an A minus, but I'm not a math guy.
89 and 91.
Anybody else for South? Is that range fair? Okay, so B plus, A minus for South. Okay, hey, let's talk about Frontline Edmond. How would you guys evaluate how you're doing in that quadrant on the Lord's Day? And you don't have to flog yourself. I mean, if you think you're just crushing it with something, that's a good thing.
I think it's an A. Yeah, I think it's something we do really well. Yeah. But like the actual preached word content, it's very important. Like the time people put in to make sure that what they're teaching is the
yeah.
Love it. I think of a way it wouldn't be an A. I think it's an A.
I was thinking of B.
Yeah.
Cool.
So B plus.
Solely because of like the, I think like the historical aspect. Like we do the creed when we do baptisms. We did it on Easter, but that's like the only time we've done it that I've noticed, at least so far. So
okay.
So there's more like historical elements. I feel like.
Yeah.
What we'd be missing in my mind is B plus.
That's good. That's helpful. So where do you guys want me to put you for Edmund? Is that
B?
B. Oh, I can't give you guys a B. You're doing better than that.
Well, I didn't know plus and minus was an option, to be honest.
I'm giving you a B. I'm giving you a B plus. I got the veto vote. Hey, and by the way, I mean, I think you're going to find that there's like so many places that in all of our congregations, we just need to really celebrate. There's a lot of integrative work that's happening on the Lord's Day. Okay, let's talk about, quickly, UConn. How do you guys feel like you're doing? That's solid. Okay, B to B plus. Shawnee, how do you guys feel like you're doing here? Love it.
And I think overall, probably an A.
Okay. Okay, let's move quickly. Sure.
I think it's important to say, like, historical church has call to worship, confession, assurance, and the benediction. So even though you're only doing a creed during baptism, you're actually rehearsing.
Yeah. You are giving them history. And by the way, like, what I don't want us to get to this place where it's like we're just trying to pursue being historic for the sake of being historic, but in a transient culture, in a rootless culture, in a culture where institutions are collapsing, more and more it's a blessing to give people, especially the next generation, a sense of stability under their feet. And they have 2,000 years of that if we're a part of the church. It's a beautiful thing. Let's talk about the soul. If we're loving the Lord in the realm of meaning, with mystery and transcendence and metaphor and poetry, what are they going to experience on a Sunday? What will be in the life of our church?
Worship. I think just the songs that we sing that carry us to that level of transcendence.
Yeah.
You know, the scripture in the song, you know?
I love that word. Transcendence. Like, ooh, that's a good word. I mean, and what you're describing is both the content, but also this is the place of beauty.
Yeah.
You know, the way beauty awakens the imagination. This is why, in sort of like the peak moments of church architecture, the idea was to lift up people's heads into worship. Now, obviously, we have to overcome that in all kinds of different contexts. Not all of us have cathedrals, but that sense of transcendence and. And here's a good word that I want us to think more about. We live in a moment that has almost completely tried to domesticate God. So we don't think about transcendence. We don't think about otherness. We don't think about immutability. There are attributes of God that we can more easily understand. And we've almost exclusively embraced those. And we've excluded the attributes of God that actually lead us to a place of fear. And that's something I really want us to take some ground in. Yeah.
Kind of soulful.
Yeah, soulful. It's good. Yeah, art and aesthetics are huge here. And like, it's easy to sort of back burner that and just not think about it. But this is a place where even just beautiful spaces matter. Yeah. You know, beautiful spaces matter. The kind of slides that we're doing. I'm so encouraged by Bailey and your team and just what's happening in terms of beauty in the life of our church. What else did you put here?
Contemplation.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't be... Yeah. What else?
I think we do this in song well, and I also think we do it in sermons, poetry. Mm-hmm. Just the way that there's a lot of soul behind like some of the poetic language that you use in song and preaching.
This is a place where I'd love to encourage everybody, both in preaching and in songwriting and in the way we lead, to just incorporate more of the metaphors for the church. That's a place where we help give people, we invite people into the realm of meaning. We help answer why questions when we do that.
Would the sacraments be a part of...
Hugely. Hugely. This is where, I'm not going to put it on the board, I'm getting tired of scribbling, but this is where I really want us to fight for having, I want us to have an evangelical sacramentalism in the life of our church. Where we're not just going through the motions, but we're not, you know, if the two extremes are the sort of sacerdotal Roman Catholic, where it was just sort of magical stuff happening because magical people were saying magical words and faith wasn't a part, we don't want to believe that, nor do we want to be like the radical reformers like Zwingli, where there's nothing really happening, it's just a memorial. We want to expect, as Reformed charismatics, that in baptism and in the Lord's Supper, the Spirit of God is doing profound, miraculous things and after actually offering grace to people.
Yes.
There's an expectancy to the response of like, in our teams, in our stuff, just like knowing that when the Word of God is preached, that there will be a response. So looking for that proactivity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, man, that's really good. Stories really do, because stories help incarnate truth and meaning and beauty. They help us understand it and feel it. Okay, so let's take a second and talk about how we're doing. By the way, just a side note, do you feel how important it is to inhabit the tensions of all these just by only doing two? Because this... Having this incorporated in the life of our church would keep us out of the ditch of sort of getting to a place where we're dry and doctrinaire. And having this in the life of the church keeps us out of the ditch of things becoming so mysterious that nobody knows what the heck is going on. Right? We need all four of these really badly. Okay, UConn, how are you guys doing here?
Our space is super beautiful.
That's a given. That's a given.
Until you said space really matters.
But can I just say something here? That's just a place that you guys, it's really fun when we start to think like Apollo 13. And what I mean by that is a lot of Christians will do the thought experiment. If money wasn't an object, if time wasn't an object, if you could do whatever you wanted to do, what would you do? And I get that. That's a good thought experiment because it gets you into your desires. But a more helpful thing for church planners is to think Apollo 13, where, hey, here's this filter that doesn't fit the actual filter that you need to work. And with duct tape and these scraps that you have in this capsule, how do you build a filter that's going to keep you from dying? So it's just fun to think within limitations, how do limitations become a place for creativity? So a fun thing for you guys to do would be like, hey, how do we dream without it becoming, you know, like we're trying too hard? How could we incorporate into our space some artifacts of transcendence and beauty that would bless people?
Yeah, the thing that came to mind, just the number of creative, thoughtful pieces of art that our kids come home with.
Awesome.
Like, it's just like encouraging questions, encouraging all these things that we're building as parents because that stuff was like stirred up in the kids' classroom.
It's awesome.
Like,
that's right. That's right. And it's even better because they're actually participating in creating it. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Even when he stopped by the map of groups that Jacob had made.
Yeah.
The aesthetic quality of it far exceeded the stage of their life as a congregation.
That's so good. So good. What would you guys grade yourselves?
A serious answer about our building facilities is just we're not on the block. We have neighbors right there with us. We're in this mission field with our people, and that speaks volumes to things.
Yeah.
The people that we interact and rub shoulders with all the time. We talk about it. It's a part of our just at regular rhythms of that we are walking with non-believers here.
Yeah.
In our space, not across the street, in our space. And so
it's awesome.
It's something that's really beautiful for our church.
What would you guys grade yourselves? Do you notice how UConn is just avoiding that question?
I'd like JJ to give us a grade.
That seem fair? Okay. C+. Okay, that's good. That's like, I'd be encouraged by that. And there's also the reality that's like certain things, there's just a law of diminishing returns. So it's like you have to decide what battles you're going to fight. And there might be ways, even in the way that you guys preach and lead your liturgy and go to the Lord's Supper, where maybe even emphasizing some of those things would be the place that you would get more traction in this quadrant. Shawnee, how would you guys grade yourselves?
Maybe. We might be a D+.
Wow, okay, why so low?
This is our least. This is where we have the most room to grow. And part of it is because I want us, that's the area that I love the most, that I function in the most personally. And I want us to excel in. And I see a lot of gaps there. We struggle, and part of it is part of the world that we're in, just with a lot of students, and a lot of sort of small denomination culture, but we struggle with the word. I mean, I say the word mystery on the stage, and people, their eyes go across.
Yeah.
And so we just really struggle. We want artifacts. We want facts as a congregation, and I think that we don't do a very good job at times holistically.
Yeah.
Leading our church to embrace the mystery.
Yeah.
That's like
well, and where you guys are, this is probably the most absent quadrant in most SBC churches. You know, so that's just kind of where you live. So,
you guys disagree with me if I'm wrong, but.
Well, even space, we can't get any elderly people in our building. And so we can't get any elderly people in our building.
We have, every week, similar to downtown, we have a building that just as soon as you walk in, you're led to worship.
Yeah. One of the things really special about your place is that you guys have the best light in all of our congregations. Like, no, you really do. You have the most beautiful, the morning light, the way it comes through your windows. Okay, so give a letter grade, guys. I want. We got more work to do. What's your letter grade? Okay. South. So you're saying I have a chance.
I put South at a C.
Okay.
Because not for our facility, although our facility is challenging to work with. Sean's done a really good job, and it has grown a lot. But this is the hardest one to do, and I think that like this is the very first one that's going to drift for us when it comes to liturgy or anything that we're doing that's already different. We take it for granted, but people forget all the time. Like, why do we stop and confess sin?
Yeah.
Why do we do assurance? Why do we do the liturgies that we do? And I just think that we don't explain. We just take it for granted way too much.
That's really powerful what Andrew's saying, guys. One of the places you will grow in more integration with soul is if you keep coming back to answer why.
I think we also feel the tension against the relationship aspect, so we try to be more relatable and we pursue relationship, and so we kind of erase the mystery or like kind of put it over here in an attempt to like invite people in and
sure.
be relatable.
And that's a real tension, right? It's a real tension.
I don't know if this will make sense, but I think it does in my brain. It's like soul for me requires a high level of maturity that when you think about, I think of soul often can be the sort of the gray area that needs a little bit more defining but can still stay gray. And without maturity, if you stay gray, you stay too ethereal and you have no idea what you're saying. And I think Sean helps us lead into this a lot. And I think that I agree with that grade, C+. I think there's so many things that we need to really fight into. I'm even just thinking about ways that I want to lead in liturgy in a different way that adds soul and meaning and the why.
Yeah, it's good. Edmund, how do you guys feel like you're doing here?
Before we grade,
yep.
Can I backtrack and
please.
Add something to the soul? I think as a church, we do a good job of talking about suffering and not being afraid of suffering as a Christian, just like the perseverance of the saints. From the pulpit and community groups and D groups. If we weren't afraid to go through the book of Job.
Yeah.
So I know like we do need to honestly evaluate, but I will say on the trail of suffering, as a church we do a great job, and I believe that leans heavily into the soul.
That's encouraging. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
Edmonites, where are you guys at?
I think our physical space has some desire there. Like there's some.
How would you evaluate the landscaping that you so powerfully led him into?
Bumped us into a passing grade.
Yeah. So
I think particularly in our sanctuary space.
Yeah.
I think there's some things that are happening that Bailey's working on, and Dave's pioneering. I think
our sanctuary.
Yeah.
And so Bailey does a really good job with that.
I think one important artifact, I was thinking back to some membership interviews over the past couple of weeks, people can't, they're like, there's just something I love about Sunday.
Yeah.
And they can't name it. And then it's like this moment where they're like feeling a little bit of liturgy that we're like putting forth on a Sunday.
Yeah.
In a soulful way.
Yes.
And they can't even name it. And then I'm like, yeah, it's because we value liturgy. They're like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like this like aha moment for people that are like becoming a part of our church, and then it becomes like a teaching moment, which leads to practice.
Yes.
And they're like bought in because they're like they're since they feel it, they can't name it.
That's right. Yeah. So good. Okay, let's move over here to heart. What would the artifacts be on a Sunday morning if we were integrated in this quadrant?
Intercession and the ministry of prayer.
Okay. Talk more about that. really good. Oh, man, I love that. That's so
heartfelt, vibrant, like welcome time and passing guests.
Yes. Hospitality.
I was thinking just have someone with stay of strangers because our people are seeking out those who are
interjected. Yeah, can we just say like move towards people?
Yeah.
What else? I love that. Hospitality and, gosh, I mean, I would just say space for relationship. Hey, one of the things I love, I love being at Frontline Edmund during the guest welcome. Like, that's just such an artifact of you guys really do this quadrant well. There's just a sense of people love each other and they want to be with each other, and it feels like people are getting pulled into those relationships. So, like, our guest welcome will be an artifact. What else? Say again? Yeah, you will hear about and you will be invited to and you will experience the presence of community groups somehow on Sunday.
You like seeing people in groups sitting together.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would be such a fun thing. Like, if we could just, in all of our congregations, just sort of imagine how could community groups be more present and more visible on a Sunday morning. And I'm not talking about weird stuff where we're like making people, they have to sit together and they have to get there early. But what would it look like if we just did a good job of leading our groups into actually having some kind of expression on Sunday mornings where they're just present? They're helping set the tone. Because, like, when we're talking about experience here, right? Experience with God and people in relationships of trust, that's happening in groups. So, how do we get some of that strength and that beauty to spill over into a Sunday?
Yeah. I think a lot about the ways in which people gather during communion.
Yeah.
It just shows both do we have visitors in the room who are alone in that? Are we gathering together in family groups or in a community group? Like, what do those look like?
Yes. So good.
I think a small artifact is too is like at the end of a service in our prayer, in our ministry of prayer, when we know people are suffering or they're asking God for something, and I see their group rally around.
Yeah. Yeah. Just there's so much around this prayer piece here. That's like I would include this is like our intercession. This is post service. This will affect pre service prayer. Yeah. Hey, this is one of the places where you could also put this in strength when we get to it, but there'd be a sense of greater ownership. We talked to guys going through EDC last night about being thermostats, like lead, set the temperature in the room. And this is a place where relationship, where we really do have the ability because of so many deep relationships and real encounters with God to just turn the temperature up in our church. So good. Yeah. Love that. Love that.
I think we also see people trying to fight for and repair relationships on a Sunday, like particularly before going to the
Lord's table. Oh, wow. Yeah, reconciliation on the Lord's Day. What were you going to say?
Church that like has heart is gonna not be bothered by
Right.
Yeah.
You know, or the kids running around eating communion bread afterwards, or whatever.
Yeah, a culture that sees kids as a blessing and not an obstacle.
Would you say redeemed touch, like people hugging each other?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, redeemed touch. I mean, it would not be a cultural win for us, but it's just interesting thinking about the kiss of peace in the early church. How do we create spaces where appropriate touch is happening and it welcomes people? Okay, so there's a lot more we could do here. Let me just throw out two other things that are connected. This will show up in how long people hang out after service and people showing up early to be together before service. And one of the things downtown, downtown, we don't have good common space connected to the cathedral. So we're going to start working towards, hopefully very soon, having the fellowship hall open, because I just want to have a space with good coffee and where people can get together with their D group or meet friends and be together. So how could you foster the kind of space that contains this? Okay, let's evaluate. Yukon, Shawnee, South, Edmond. Yukon, where are you guys at here? I would too. I always experienced this as a real thriving artifact in your church. Shawnee?
Hey.
Yeah, we're an A.
South?
I think we're an A.
Edmond? I like the ownership of that, the flex. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Hey, can we just pause here for a second? Look at how encouraged you guys should be in what God's doing in our church. I mean, just look at those letter grades for a second. And just keep in mind, this is one of the deep passions of our church, is to actually have all four of these as real and vibrant. And that's just a weird, rare thing in the life of the church. It's so much easier to have less instruments we have to pay attention to in the cockpit. This creates complexity for us. This creates difficulty for us, but it's just good and it's biblical and it's true and it's worth giving our lives to. Okay, let's do this last one. Strength. I really want you guys to think creatively here. If we were loving the Lord our God with strength on a Sunday, in the realm of execution, action, answering how, in the place of doing, what would be the artifacts of that on the Lord's Day? Okay. The action of prayer.
Yeah.
That's really good. Those hadn't occurred to me before.
I don't know how to think about this exactly. The strength blunder in this scenario for Sundays feels like, how do we make the other three quadrants function and hold tension really well? You know? It's like, so with that, like, we have people in place that are really good at what they do, you know, and like we have one of the things that I noticed when I started coming here is like the songwriting church, the preachers aren't running a play, like it's, you know, and so it just feels like we've got people in place that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I
would say to just try to put a word on that, this is a place where one of the artifacts would be excellence.
Yeah.
Like, and can we just, on behalf of excellence, let me just say a couple of things. Excellence as an end is dumb. Excellence as a means is essential. As a means of encountering God, as a means of inviting people. And one of the things that we have to understand is that people that are already in don't care about excellence. People that are not already in care deeply about excellence, because that's the roadblock that pulls them out of the main thing being the main thing. So like, a committed member that's ride or die for Jesus and loves our church with all their heart doesn't care if the sound sucks on a Sunday. A brand new person that's showing up for the first time is pulled out of everything that's happening if sound is distracting on a Sunday. And we could do that with 1,000 different examples.
Yes, yeah. That's good. I think out of the excellence thing is like the amount of work that our musicians and artists and liturgists and tech volunteers put into the preparation for Sundays.
Yep.
Like I'm getting texts on Fridays and Saturdays of like the work that's being done to prep for Sunday.
Yeah, this is huge, man. Music, tech, and sound. Those are huge.
It's also the action of hospitality.
Yep.
Which is feels paramount. You know, it's like, are the bathrooms clean? Does the church care about the trash out in front of the door?
Well, this is the place. Let's do it in two ways because you're naming two things that are essential. You're naming that part, like the place that we put facilities is primarily in this quadrant. It touches here too. But primarily, this is facilities. This is where clean, clear, welcoming, open facilities with good signage is so essential. So essential. To constantly put yourself in the shoes of a newcomer and walk through and experience a Sunday morning and ask yourself the question, what would be confusing? What would be distracting? What would derail me here today? It's huge. And then the other thing that you're mentioning is with hospitality, it's, has anybody ever heard like, let's just be organic with relationship. And then you realize that you never hang out with somebody, you know, just the organic approach is so incredibly overrated because you actually value what you plan for. And so if we want to have good hospitality, this is where we get to the place of teams and adequate staffing. And how we do kids check-in.
We need to have actual on-ramps on the Sunday for people to join the community group, jump in with the city partner and serve us in the capacity.
This is the place of on-ramps / next steps, right? Yeah. And yep.
Not done on the fly.
Yeah. What else?
I think an artifact of doing this well as a church would also be that there's a ton of non-believers in the room. Like, between Sundays, we're bringing in, we're reaching our community.
Yep.
Actively practicing these things, that would manifest, I think, there's something.
A culture of bringing is huge. Yeah. Evangelistic intentionality.
Talking to the people you want in the room.
Yep.
I think invitation to discipleship in each moment of the liturgy, or actually, hey, raise your hands. Hey, remember again, your money's not yours. Actually, an invitation to application to people.
Yep.
Which are clear, like, hey, don't come to the
table. Application is a good word here. What else, guys? Think about, this is the place of safety. For kids especially. But safety with facilities and adequate security.
We do all this with volunteers, you know? And so I think the word empowering comes to mind.
Yeah.
How am I not running every roadblock on a Sunday, but I'm empowering people?
Yeah, volunteer empowerment and equipping. Yeah, this is like really doing a good, excellent job with time constraints and making sure that every piece of our liturgy is held with preparation, that we're answering the big questions when we do liturgy. Why are we doing this? What are we asking people to do? How are we asking them to do it? And who are the people in the room that we're speaking to? Coming back to that again and again and again.
It feels like there's something here that goes along with teams, but like identifying gifting
actually, let's do one or two things that you're gifted in.
Yeah.
Develop those strengths, you know?
Doing a good job of alignment.
Yeah.
Like, hey, where do you fit?
It's answering the question, how does somebody get engaged in community groups? How does somebody engage in mission through this church? So much of Sunday is meant to propel people in the 6 days between Sundays.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
How questions? Hey, can I just put a word up here that I think we should pay way more attention to than we do? Just detail. This is the place where details really matter. Like, room dynamics matter, and things being out of place matter. That same thing in your brain that registers, the part of your brain that registers pain is also the part of your brain that was designed to register things that are out of order. So it's just thinking about details. How would someone experience this room if they weren't used to our church and if they didn't love our church? Yeah. You know, when you become smell blind to your own house, yeah. Like where are we smell blind in our congregations?
I think one of the things that have helped us here grow here is our prayer team Saturday night. We have a team that gets together and prays for Sunday, Saturday night. And I think just them doing that consistently, and I mean, that can be sometimes two people, sometimes, you know, 10, 12, but it's whoever's available Saturday night, they get together and pray for Sunday and with expectancy.
It's cool.
And we get a lot of prophetic words and stuff.
Yeah, I think of the word like stewardship, why we steward our space, steward people's time, steward our volunteers.
Yeah.
Using all that stuff there.
People, space, and time. It's good. Okay, so let's evaluate this one. How are we doing in loving the Lord with our strength on Sundays? UConn? Does that feel about right to the other UConn guys?
Yeah, I was gonna say C.
Okay. Shawnee.
Yeah,
that would give us at least a B.
That's it.
I feel like of course I'm a detail person, so.
And Kim's never rated anything under a B.
I was gonna say I was expecting a lot lower. That's why I'm calling.
No, you think it'd be legit?
I think we're growing in that a lot because of the teams that we have right now.
It's good.
But also, I think it's important, one of the things you said, let me see if I can find it. You're talking about time constraints and next steps. I mean, there's a lot of preparation that goes into that, but there's got to be meaning. You've got to always remember this isn't about making sure everything's done in a certain amount of time. It's making sure it's done in a meaningful way that brings people.
Yep.
And I think that's where we're growing.
I just think all of our volunteers that we have throughout the building, that we have a small team,
yeah.
That are very capable. Yeah. Doing a really great job.
That's great. So B?
I mean, if you don't agree with that.
That's very B.
Find what you can.
South.
C plus.
Okay.
I
shouldn't have allowed you guys to use pluses and minuses.
I think an average C, a 75. A C. I think we've got some good places to grow.
Yeah, that's
good.
Yeah, I think.
Okay, nobody else speaks up. I'm going to put it up there.
I've visited your congregation 100 times. I think you guys did a great job.
I think we do a lot of
things.
Specific
part.
I think we do a lot of things well.
Yeah, I think we do a lot of things well. Even one thing that I'm noticing, even in just as I look at my ministry, I agree with Todd, I think it's a C. I think that oftentimes I can walk away from a Sunday and think that we did a good job in the strength quadrant saying things like, well, nothing fell apart today, and that's a good thing. And although it is a good thing, but it's like, okay, when nothing fell apart, what's the next level of excellence to go to for strength?
Yeah.
To offer better execution.
I also think we're going to be, like, we're growing, and so we're having to refigure how we're doing teams, how we're getting more people to serve. So I would also say,
Right?
Yeah, because when we were at 300-person church, it was probably, yeah. I could say B plus to an A, but it's like, yeah. As we grow, change.
Yeah. Okay. Edmund?
I give us an encouraging seat.
It's good.
Hopeful seed. Yeah, and honestly, what came to mind was I was thinking, first off, to me, strength is like the hardest because it entails so much. But this is why strength, all of these, but strength in particular, is why it's really helpful to visit not only other church, other congregations as you can, but even as you have the freedom to take field trips and experience other churches.
Yes. Yeah.
In ways that are, you can be encouraged to be like, oh man, that kid's checking was an abomination, you know. But you can also say, wow, like I didn't even think about hospitality in that way, or how they set up that space blows my mind. And so I think C stands for continue. It's like we're not failing, but what we could grow into is pretty profound in strength. And so there's a lot of ground to be gained in that.
And let me just say two things, two of my historic leadership failings that have affected downtown more than the other congregations, but it's probably affected all of us a little bit. I think the value I have, which I don't want to lose, which is got gold and shadow, the value I have for grittiness and, you know, non-performative ministry, the sort of like punk rock ethos that I planted this church in some ways has hampered and hindered our growth here. And there are places in the life of our church, especially downtown, there's places where we're boxing below our weight class in this quadrant. And it's just worth naming that. It's worth thinking about that. The other thing is, because some of the churches in our city that are the big, most public mega churches do this quadrant almost exclusively, it's easy to react against that and pretend that this quadrant's not spiritual. And I just want to say it is spiritual. It's as spiritual as the other three. It's a command that we respond to the grace of God and love the Lord in this quadrant. Yeah. So it's not negotiable. Yeah.
Josh,
it matters.
Do you think it's possible to have that grit that you just talked about while operating in a healthy way in that, where there is a little bit of that grit rawness, but things are being executed really well?
I think there is. I think that we have to be careful. Where we should be experiencing grit is different than where we experienced grit a few years ago.
Gotcha.
There should be zero grit when it comes to our print materials, zero grit when it comes to our audio video. Where we should experience grit is like if we're really taking risks to reach people and if we're inviting messy people into the life of our church, being comfortable with those messes, loving those messes, that's where we would experience grit. I think sometimes we look back, those of you guys that are the OGs, and you look back at like Frontline on Broadway, there are ways in which true and beautiful and good things that were values were transferred. And then there's ways that we took a snapshot of a time and a moment and we pretended that those were values and brought them forward in ways that are probably not helpful.
Like cut off jean shorts.
Yes.
I'm so glad that we are multiple congregations. Allows us to make sure that our kids are safe. There's a preaching team that can, you know, there's an artifact in each one of the quadrants that is this shared value that gets lifted up because we have different parts of the team and different people that sit in the different quadrants.
It's good. Okay, go ahead. And then we got to close.
The last thing I was thinking about with strength is like, it's frustrating that chefs who deal with food would outdo us in their craft when what we have is so much. You know what I mean? Like, chefs spend so much time and effort in it. It's like, how do we get a hold of that ambition and desire for my craft?
Yeah.
For preaching and for leading and for serving kids. And so, that's good.
Okay, so here's what I ask you guys to do, and this is what we've been doing downtown. I'd love for you guys to pick one quadrant that you want to see some traction and growth in the next semester in the life of our church. So it looks like for almost all of us, it's either going to be soul or strength. Downtown, the glaring weakness was strength. And I just want you to think about what are the limiting factors that are keeping us from growing there? What are the mindsets? what are the self-imposed limitations? Where do we allow a scarcity mentality to keep us from growing in our quadrant? It's like the idea that there's just not enough when we just, there's no money, there's no people, there's no time. Those are the things we hear a lot of times when it comes to ministry is like, okay, what's the problem with kids ministry or youth ministry? Well, there's no volunteers, or there's no money, or there's no time. Well, those are self-limiting false realities. There are people, there is money, and everybody gets 24 hours in a day, and how we allocate it is going to determine what our values are. So what are the limitations that you've placed on yourself or on your congregation that you need to remove? And what would it look like if you just intentionally and prayerfully just had a little bit of incremental growth over the course of the next semester? What are the things that need to be addressed? What are the things that need to be adjusted? And then spend time as a team putting together a game plan for the things that you want to see different. The artifacts that you want to adjust and tweak, or the artifacts that that you want to remove. And we didn't do this today, but it's also a helpful exercise to think about antithesis artifacts as well. Because it's not just the artifacts that show what we think is true and good and beautiful. It's also the artifacts that are incongruent with what we say is true, good, and beautiful. So that's another helpful way to go through this. So I would just encourage all of your teams and lead pastors to just lead out and take a couple of next steps. What's the quadrant that you want to see growth in? What are the internal limiting factors? What are the self-imposed limiting factors? And what do you want to address over the course of the next, 6 months in the life of our church? And build a real plan. And then think about this and take ownership for the particular ministry that you lead. We want all four of these to be beautifully manifested to the glory of God on a Sunday. And that's, that's 1 Peter 2, right? Like we want to proclaim the excellencies of the God that called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. That's really what this is about. It's just glorifying God. He's worthy of us loving him with the totality of our being as individuals in a church.